Hello and welcome everyone to the Boiled Leather Audio Hour. My name is Stefan Sasse. I am a contributor to the Tower of the Hand and I have my own blog for all things nerd at thenerdstreamera.blogspot.com. And with me is, as always, my very illustrious co-host,
Sean T. Collins. I cover Game of Thrones and other television shows for such illustrious publications as Rolling Stone, Vulture, and the New York Observer. I am the co-author of the official annotated Game of Thrones, which is MIA, but I assure you is quite good, with series editor Anne Grohl and Westeros.org and The World of Ice and Fire's Elio Garcia Jr. And I am the founder of All Leather Must Be Boiled and a Song of Ice and Fire / Game of Thrones fan site located at BoiledLeather.com, which is where this podcast is hosted. And today we will be resuming a series that we began last episode, forecasting the Winds of Winter. We're going around the world of Ice and Fire, from POV character to POV character, and giving our baseless speculation about what may happen to them in the next volume. And this week we'll be tackling the characters who find themselves in Essos currently, which is a pretty diverse batch, with some big names and some lesser names, and it should be pretty interesting. But before we get into that, I just want to give you guys an update on the two fundraising initiatives that we announced last episode. First of all, I do have a new computer screen, so thank you very, very much for that. Your donations went a long way to making that possible, but it was still very fucking expensive. So if you would like to pitch in to help offset that cost, which still has not been offset, I'd be extremely grateful. You can just go to BoiledLeather.com and click on the PayPal donation site donation link at the top of the page. And that will take you to a place where you can do a one-time donation or even a monthly thing if you wanted to, but I don't really see. Well, whatever. You want to give me money, I will take your money. That's what I'm saying. But I really do appreciate it. My partner and I are both full-time freelancers working in creative fields. We have two children. It's difficult, to accommodate this kind of like emergency expense. And, especially when it happens to something that I actually need to work, which is my laptop. So that's been very, very nice of all of you, and I really am so grateful. And meanwhile, as you know, if you listened to last episode, we launched a Patreon campaign located at patreon.com/boiledleteraudiohour. Now, the way this works, since, I've talked to people who aren't necessarily familiar with the workings of the internet, and it was a little confusing to them, but it's essentially an optional, voluntary subscription service. Boiled Leather Audio Hour will always be free, but this is a way to pitch in a little bit. You can stipulate an amount that you'd like to basically donate every month. So if you think the website is worth a few bucks, and the podcast is worth a few bucks, that is, please, by all means, pitch in whatever you feel like. And there are some pretty cool rewards for higher levels of giving. We're going to do an entire question and answer episode, for people who've pitched, $5 or more, which should be a lot of fun. So if you guarantee, a question and answer right here on the podcast, by me and Stefan, if you donate at least $5 a month, which should be pretty cool. I think we'll probably be doing that next. And so on. There's other gifts, someone hit the $20 threshold and we'll get a print, from my partner, Julia Grafair, who's an extremely talented, cartoonist. But the main thing is that, at different goal levels that we hit, we basically are promising to do things that will make this a better podcast. And weirdly, Patreon doesn't make this transparent as best we can tell to people who land on the Patreon page and have to decide whether to donate. So I just wanted to let you know, what the goals were. We posted about it, but I figured I'd say it on the air as it were. So we've already hit, where we stand now, our patrons will get to vote on a topic that we will cover. So that's pretty cool. That's already in the bag. And there's a second episode like that coming up, I think, when we hit the $250 threshold a month. So that's something to look forward to. So if you want to have a say in exactly what we talk about on this podcast, join in and we can get there. We've already hit the threshold at which we guarantee now one episode a month. There will be at least 12 Boiled Leather audio hours every year, until, we're brutally murdered or for some other reason stop doing the podcast. So that's cool. Stefan, I believe is probably doing some mic shopping because we hit the threshold for, getting him a better microphone, for recording.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Which also brings me to the thing, I'm not exactly an expert in microphones, so if any of our readers knows what to buy best, please chime in with your suggestions.
Yeah, that would be very welcome. So, you know, looking at the upcoming thresholds, you know, there'll be another patron-decided topic. So you're basically going to be our co-programmers for, like, at least, two of the 12 episodes that we're going to be doing in the coming year. Bare minimum. So that's kind of exciting. You know, coming up is, you know, additional, you know, better recording software. You know, we'll take the time to figure out, because we can afford to at that point, take the time to figure out exactly how to make this thing sound better than it does. And, you know, if we hit certain, you know, pretty high levels, we'll actually be doing even more episodes a year, because again, we can treat this like, you know, freelance work, which is how I pay the bills, which would be very, very cool, and we'd be very, very grateful. So go to patreon.com/boiledleatheraudiohour, Boiled Leather Audio Hour, check it out, see if, you know, you'd like to, pledge a certain amount per month. We're glad that you're listening. We're glad that you've, been as a community so responsive and supportive. And, you know, just if you feel like it's worth, you know, that what we do is worth a few dollars a month, then, you know, by all means, pitch in and we'd be, you know, extraordinarily grateful. So I think that takes care of business.
Yes, absolutely. Say?
Yes. And now comes pleasure.
Uh-huh.
Which I... So, yeah, so let's see. The fates of our various characters in the Winds of Winter in Essos. Stefan, do you have one that you want to start with? Or?
Yeah, just let us run them down for a second, because it's only five of them who are currently in Essos, and keep in mind we're talking about POV characters here. So this is Dany, it's Tyrion, it's Arya, it's Victarion, and it's Barristan. And I think it makes a little bit of sense to start with Arya, since she is geographically removed from the rest of them,
mm-hmm.
because all the others are in the Meereen orbit, and she is pretty much not. So I'd like to start talking about Arya. And, I mean, everyone loves Arya, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think? What will happen with our assassin in being? Will she develop parkour skills like it seems to be the case in season 6? Or what do you think will happen?
Well, I hope that parkour is a thing that's starting to emerge now that Dany's dragon's hatched. You know, like magic is becoming stronger. I hope that characters all across the world of Ice and Fire are suddenly developing parkour skills, so that they can climb the wall and fight the others. I think that would be, you know, just scramble right up there. now, you know, we've talked about this some, I think, when we did the Women of Westeros episode that touched on Arya. And, you know, we came to the conclusion that I feel probably a lot of readers came to, which is that she is not long for the world of the faceless men.
No.
This is not that's not her end point. She will not be the next, like, Jaqen H'ghar or whatever. And, you know, considering events that have taken place, spoiler alert, I guess, in preview chapters and, also have been reflected in one form or another on the show, any suspicions that you might have that by preserving Needle instead of throwing it away, she's hanging on to that Stark side and those Stark grudges were justified. The question, I suppose, is does she return to Westeros And if so, how and when and why and what does she do? And I think eventually, though probably not in the Winds of Winter, she'll reunite with Nymeria and run with that motherfucking wolf pack. That's my guess. Now, perhaps she stows away. I mean, if I had to guess, I would say that maybe she stows away on the return voyage of the Lannister expeditionary force that went there to try and get money, in hopes of taking out the rest of the Lannister family.
You know who could be her ticket home? That's Justin Massey. Because he was sent by Stannis in the end stages of A Dance of Dragons. He was sent to Braavos in order to recruit mercenaries. And, I mean, he would be there. He would have knowledge about a certain imposter in Winterfell, which might just be the one thing to bring her over the edge, you know, to reaffirm her Stark identity. Like when she hears that there is a Arya Stark in Winterfell and she married Ramsay Bolton, I cannot just think of a way in which she just shrugs that off, you know?
That's really, yeah. Wow, that's really smart and a lot, I think that's so irresistible that you're probably right.
All credit goes to poor Quentin, who has figured that one out. But I really find this convincing because it gives the motive and it gives the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And for both sides, by the way, because whether or not she reveals herself to anyone, he would be not long in Braavos, you know, and it isn't exactly risky to hang on to his force, and he would be back into the north anyway. The only thing that is a problem for this one is Nymeria, because Nymeria is in the Riverlands, and there's no way that Wolfpack will go north. So, and I think you are right. She has to reunite with Nymeria at some point. I mean, why the working business?
Right.
So, I haven't figured out how this can come about in my head canon. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
I have bits and pieces, but I don't know how to get from A to B.
My presumption is that eventually everyone in the north will have to go south because they'll be driven down by the others. And I think it would be kind of a waste of time if the final confrontation, if the front never moves south of the neck, then why bother with the whole winter is coming shit? Like, so winter comes to the place where winter already is, basically. Like, it's not good enough. You know, the others have to go south, so I assume people fighting the others will have to go south. I don't think it's going to be like a Stalingrad situation where the others just surround Winterfell and that's that. You know, the front has to keep moving for it to be, for the threat of the eternal, you know, of the Long Night to really, and its eternal winter to have any, you know, kind of power behind it. You know, there's a reason snow's falling in King's Landing, and it's not so that the others can be defeated, you know, in fucking Barrowtown or whatever.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but I think Winterfell will remain a center of resistance, but I can absolutely see the others simply encircling it with like a besieging force and the bulk of the army moving south, especially in the light of Dany's prophecy from the House of the Undying, you know, where she, I think, sees them melting into the Trident, riding on her dragon or something.
Huh. I don't know. I need to revisit it. You know, I mean, this is getting a little far afield, but I've often referenced the Grant Morrison comic, The Seven Soldiers of Victory, which is a series of interlocking miniseries in which different sort of D-level DC superheroes all play a vital role in defeating this apocalyptic force that's really not unlike the others, but they never really realize that they're all working together. And I've often speculated that that would be, I don't know how you square that with the need, presumably, of Tyrion and Jon to also get dragons to ride on. But I've often wondered if the various key players will actually realize the contributions of the other key players. So if there's a center of resistance at Winterfell, and a center of resistance further south and so on, you could have a bunch of different characters doing different things, all vital to the defeat of the others, but not really you know, without the full-fledged Avengers team up, you know?
You know, I have this feeling that I will be quoting a lot of theories brought up by other people, but credit where credit's due all the time. So the Winterfell thing is something that Stephen Atwell has argued extensively on his blog because of the hot springs that were really described in detail in the Game of Thrones already, which makes it in the glass house and all of that, which makes it a uniquely suited place to fight the others. And the castle is also so big. You know, it's ridiculously big, so it can take a lot of people in case, and it is warm, always warm, in case, you know, like an ice zombie army arriving.
Right.
So Winterfell has to play some role.
Oh, absolutely,
But I also see the merits that you bring forth of the others pushing south. So Arya could definitely belong to those who don't stay in Winterfell. Mm-hmm. Especially Winterfell feels like some sort of last stand. And given what we talked about already with Jon, I think Arya might have a role to play here too. Like, I have to seek out Jon and tell him whatever she found out. Right. So this might be going in that direction, actually.
Yep.
Just throwing ideas around here. Mm-hmm. And we will revisit the idea of where the others will actually fight when we get to the southern... how do you say it, slew of characters?
Right.
But right now I would want to push that off. But yes, so in essence, Arya is going back to Westeros and not on an official assignment.
Mm-hmm.
So let's jump to Meereen, shall we?
Oh, let's do.
so the Meereen is not. At least it has been untangled a little bit. And right now everything is falling to pieces.
Yeah.
Because Dany obviously isn't there anymore. Tyrion is about to utterly destroy the Yankish army. Victarion is going to help in this, and Barristan also.
Yeah.
So let's start Barristan, because I have a feeling he will be gone soon. do you think he will die?
You know, it's not something I have particularly strong feelings about one way or the other. It does seem like a fitting death for him to die in defense of the city and defense of his, you know, of his queen, in effect. I don't know, at the same time, I'm such a sucker for, like, ragtag bunches that I just kind of love the idea of, Barristan coming back to Westeros, you know, at the vanguard of this army of the dispossessed. But I kind of feel that's probably unlikely. And that he will be killed during the battle. That he'll win, his side will win.
Yes.
But, yeah.
I guess we have to talk a little bit about the battle, because it obviously is important. It spans at least 3 chapters or 4, because we already know about 1 or 2 Tyrion chapters in the battle, 1 Barristan chapter, 1 Victarion chapter. So this is going to be a huge affair, like the Battle of the Blackwater. So there will be a lot of stuff happening. And I'm pretty down with the theory that the Shave Pate, who has been left by Barristan in the city with the Brazen Beasts to defend the city, he will use the opportunity and murder all the hostages. You know, the kids?
Yeah.
That Dany took in, I think he would kill them all, and then as many nobles from the pyramids as possible. So when a victorious Barristan returns to the city, and I don't think he will die in battle.
Oh, okay.
I think the Shave
Pate. You think he'll be murdered by the Shave Pate?
Yes. Which would also continue to mirror Ned Stark's own downfall. You know, like the honest soldier brought down by the intrigues, stuff like that.
That's true. Yeah, Barristan trying to play the Game of Thrones and everything. That's a good point.
Yeah, I can't imagine that he will get his, glorious death in battle.
Mm-hmm.
I think he will win, return really triumphant, and then see the horror that he has allowed to happen. And what happens then, it's hard to say.
Yeah, he does. There has to be some kind of moral reaction to the fact that he obviously guessed wrong as to who was the poisoner of the locusts and the architect of the assassination attempt. Which I believe is the Shave Pate.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
This is a really contentious issue still, by the way. I'm reading it constantly, and the answers are really diverging wildly.
Mm-hmm.
Between Green Grace and Hizdar himself as the Harpy and Shavebate, there are a lot of possible culprits.
That's true. So then you want to tackle Tyrion, then?
Yeah, I guess that's it about Barristan. He will die in about the first half of the book, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So Tyrion, he will not die.
No.
No, absolutely not. He's currently in this strange mood, you know, this nihilistic, the world sucks, and I have always said that the world sucks, and now I'm going to prove to you, Penny, how much the world sucks. Look at how people die. And he's really unpleasant at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the battle will do nothing to help this. So the question is, what will happen afterward? I don't imagine it will be like in the series, you know, that you will stand atop the pyramid together with Varys and so, no, let's rule.
No.
I can't imagine that. Not
no, he won't be ruling Meereen, but I do think he'll be an influential figure. If only because, you know, he's writing all these deals that sort of remake the power balance in, like, all different parts of the world, right? You know, like, he's, you know, he promised the Vale to the tribes, and he wants Casterly Rock, and he promised, what was it, is it the Tattered Prince that he promised to support his...
No, bid? That was Quentin.
That was Quentin?
Yes.
So who did Tyrion promise to help take over someplace?
The Second Sons, he sold them basically all the money of Casterly Rock, and promised them their castles back, or castles in the first place.
Okay.
Quentin is promising the Tattered Prince that he gets Pentos, and Aegon, of course, promises the Golden Company their castles back. So there is a lot of disruptive power right now.
So what happens to the Tattered Prince now? I'm so confused.
The Tattered Prince is inside Meereen, or no, he's not. He's with his troops. He's also turning cloaks. Quentin arranged that. So Tyrion arranged for the Second Sons.
Okay.
Quentin arranged for the Tattered Prince. Both of them will fall on the Yunkai, which will totally seal. And the Volantii, of course. They are also arriving.
You cut out a bit there, Stefan.
What didn't you get?
I think the last thing I heard you say is that they're all going to turn on the Yunkai.
Yeah, the Tattered Prince and his Windblown will turn on the Yunkai at the same time that Tyrion the Second Sons will. And we have also the invasion of the Ironborn and the landing of the Volantine fleet. All of that will likely happen in the Battle of Fire.
Right.
Oh, and of course two dragons flying through
the air.
Yes,
indeed. Well, I guess
attracted by violence and blood.
I guess this this naturally leads us to Victarion, whose fate we've also discussed at length in previous episodes. I think on various theories suggesting that he is Azor Ahai reborn, which he's not. And I don't like Makoro is just like openly mocking him to his face, and he's too stupid to realize it.
Yeah.
And like, don't you readers be too stupid to realize it too? I mean, come on. You know, I guess the only, you know, he's doomed. The only question is whether the horn works at all. And.
Oh, it does.
So, but then who blows it?
Victarion himself, of course. I mean, Makoro is already edging him towards it. You know, like, this is a very powerful horn. You know, mm-hmm. A lesser man would be killed if he blew it, because that was the trap your brother set, because he thinks you are a lesser man. You shouldn't blow it, but then your brother will think you are a lesser man. You know, it's like so obvious what Makoro wants to achieve,
right?
And I really think that Victarion will simply wrestle it away from his underling and like, I have to blow it, and then blow it. And of course it will work, and it will attract Rhaegal, and Rhaegal will fly off to his new master, which sits, by the way, at the other end of Westeros. So this will be a rather long flight, and Dany will be short a dragon.
Oh, so you think when he blows the horn...
The dragon will come to him, yes.
will come to Victarion?
No, Victarion will be dead. It will come to Euron. But Euron is on the Shield Islands.
It will come to Euron?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's the one who gave Victarion the horn.
But why would Mokoro egg Victarion on to blowing a horn given to him by his evil brother?
Because it will kill him.
So the dragon will come to Euron, his new master, and kill his new master?
No, Euron will enslave it.
But why would Mokoro want that?
I'm not quite sure if he is in the clear about all the details. I think he has much more an idea about what his wishes say than Melisandre does. And he has talked about, if I'm not totally mistaken, he has talked about Euron, basically, that he had this dream. I think he tells it to Tyrion about all of that. Or am I confusing it with the House of the Undying prophecy? I'm not quite sure. But in the House of the Undying, at least, Dany gets the prophecy of Euron with the dead, cold lips as a menace she will have to best sooner or later. And for that, he needs a dragon. So I think the horn will work.
Well, no, that was in the husband part of the thing.
Ah, okay.
The gray lips smiling sadly and shit.
Yes, exactly. I think this is Euron. But I might get carried away here, but I'm not quite sure. I think Victarion will blow the horn, will die, and the dragon will go to Euron. Perhaps Mokoro is even honest about trying to warn him, and Victarion will get it in the wrong way or whatever, which would make more sense for Mokoro, I guess. But now you have me. I'm quite interested what our listeners will say.
Huh.
But I stand to the prognosis that he will blow the horn, die, dragon will go off to Euron.
I remain something of a horn skeptic, if only because there's no mention of dragon controlling horns in the World of Ice and Fire or any of the backstory. Now, that could be a strategic absence, of course. You know, as we discussed with Elio and Linda when we had them on, there were things that were left out of the book. There were things that were kind of hinted at, but not actually said. There were things that were skipped over. And there were things that just left out entirely because they were better deployed in the main story.
Yes.
But, I don't know. Just the idea that it's never quite sat right with me that there's a magical horn that can control a dragon. Like, let alone be used as a remote control to program a dragon to fly all the way across the world to a complete stranger. That just doesn't, something about that's not quite right.
Okay, that also makes sense. So now I'm really on the fence here. Okay, so I will have to give this more thought than I can afford right now.
Yeah.
But I think we can both agree that Victarion, of our whole POV Meereen kind of thing, he will be the first to go during battle.
Yeah, and it'll be a delight to
to
watch him go. I hate Victarion.
Yeah, you should. he is also hilarious in a kind of menacing, hilarious kind of way.
No, for sure. He's a black comedy character. I like that.
Yes.
So then I guess in Meereen, that brings us to Tyrion. We've sort of discussed already.
Yes. Tyrion, after the battle, is kind of a cipher to me right now. Because he needs to pull himself back from the abyss at some point. But I don't yet see how, really, and when, and the logistics of it, how it will play out, and what his role will be. I mean, he's obviously one of the strongest political players left in Meereen after the battle. But at the same time, Meereen is a dead end. You know, the story can't really remain there.
Right, yeah, I mean, that's why I wanted to bring him up again, because I think, you know, once we start talking about Victarion's defeat and dragons flying hither and yon, then it kind of leads us to be like, okay, so what's the status quo? Like, are we going to, you know, is there a status quo? Or do they just leave? And does Tyrion get a dragon at this point?
Not at this point, no. I think he will get one, either at the end of the Winds of Winter or very early in A Dream of Spring.
Yeah, that seems like a big moment. Maybe they're saving... You know what? I feel like Jon and Tyrion getting their dragons is a good ending for the Winds of Winter.
I think Jon will have to wait longer.
Really?
Yeah, because I believe that Euron will get a dragon, so one of them has to wait.
Oh, okay, right. That makes sense.
I'm still down with the Winds of Winter ending with Dany landing in Dragonstone. So I'm more opting for Jon getting it halfway through Dream of Spring, but Tyrion might get his in Winds of Winter already in Essos. And I think the role that Tyrion will have to play, strictly logistically speaking, is to be one of the commanders of, or the principal commander of Dany's army, because Dany is not like to do it. I don't think that she will return from her stint with the Dothraki and simply join whatever Khalasar she has united under her command with the rest of the army and then march on like a normal conqueror. I think she will rather lead the Dothraki in a raid of their own, because she has a very juicy target for them. You know what I mean?
Volantis?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it could be Tyrion's job to actually do what she couldn't, which is this whole organize the mess and rule it while she flies on to Pentos, grill Illyrio, and then hop over to Dragonstone.
Yeah. You know, I guess now we're talking about Daenerys, so we may as well really talk about Daenerys. And I always seen a potential parallel, between Daenerys and Jon in the following volume, insofar as they're both kind of having their born again moments, right? And so, you know, if we assume, as we do, that Jon will be revived, and if we assume, as I think we do, that, you know, as obviously we do, that Dany's not going to get beheaded by, you know, some Dothraki, and she is in fact going to wind up uniting all the Dothraki behind her, which I kind of see.
She has to go back to Base Dothrak.
Right.
Fulfill this whole Prince that Riots prophecy.
Yeah. You know, I wonder there if there was some sort of gender issue there. Anyway, and they weren't talking about the fetus inside her, they were talking about actual her. Their sonogram technology was kind of fucked up, so they didn't realize who they were pronouncing the stallion that mounts the world. But yes, it was in fact the mother and not the child. But anyway, my point is that their attitudes, I think, will be kind of elevated and esoteric and remote and supernatural. And you know what I mean? They're not going to have the same concerns and doubts and drives and fears. I'm not saying they're going to be like... They're going to be emotionless crusaders for, you know, the forces of goodness. I'm just saying that, like, I think you'll see a marked transformation in their attitudes and their personalities.
Yes, absolutely.
The thing that I keep coming back to when I think about it is there's a scene in The Stand by Stephen King where they're hypnotizing this character named Tom Cullen, who, you know, has like a very, you know, he has like a very low IQ or whatever, and they think this will help him deceive the bad guy. You know, he can sneak into the bad guy camp and like convincingly act like he was driven out of the good guy camp, and because he's not smart enough to be bad at lying, I guess is kind of the gist of it. Anyway, they hypnotize him, and all of a sudden he starts speaking with like an elevated tone and an intelligence and a seriousness that they had never seen from him before. And they asked, you know, and he has all this information about that he expresses in a really creepy way about Flag, their enemy. And they say something like, "Are you still Tom?" His name's Tom Cullen. And he says, "I am God's Tom." you know, like he's some essential part of himself that was not on display before, but now has been brought out. And so I often think that we'll see God's John and God's Daenerys. You know, it's still the same person, but a side that has been previously inaccessible and is now coming to the fore, you know, with the final battle in motion.
That's interesting, yes. I totally agree about this traversing from the realm of the Game of Thrones into a more metaphysical realm. Let's call it the realm of ice and fire.
Right, right.
You know, because at some point this has to happen.
Yeah.
And I guess this is the point where Benioff and Weiss will ask themselves if it was clever to name the show Game of Thrones. But right now we're always asking the question in reverse. But this has to happen. I'm not sure whether it will be like a godlike awakening or more like a great burden that has been foisted upon them. But of course they are not mutually exclusive.
Right, yeah.
So... I mean, it's George R. R. Martin. It has to be a great burden to be this, you know, like to have the fate of the world on your shoulders and all that metaphysical magic crap bearing down on you. That has to destroy a person.
Yep, I think so. I don't think Dany or Jon or Tyrion will survive to the end of the books.
No, absolutely not. They will fly to the heart of winter and they will never return, and neither will the dragons. So yeah. All those questions that you wanted to ask about which dragon will survive, here's the answer.
No, I don't think there'll be any dragons anymore either. You know, I've wondered whether it's going to be like a straight-up Tolkien pastiche and magic will sort of go out of the world again. My assumption's yes, frankly. But, you know, who knows?
Yes.
And that's all RP. Well, another reason I wanted to bring up Tyrion again, I forgot, now I remember, is Jorah, his new pal.
Yeah. Yeah, best pals forever.
Yeah. You know, this, I actually think Jorah will make it back to Westeros.
Maybe.
I kind of think he will. And it'll be like a, you know, of some kind of bittersweet homecoming, and it's not like he's going to live a long time to enjoy it. You know, he's not going to go back to Bear Island and, you know, marry a nice local.
He has basically hit a dead end. You know, there is nowhere to go for him.
Right.
He's branded for life, like physically and psychologically. He has been... disowned by two possible masters, and one of them he doesn't even want to leave. I think for one he is in a giant disappointment. In the show he already had it with Dany rejecting him over and over again, but I don't imagine he will have a chance to meet Dany again until A Dream of Spring, because I think she will be in front of all the others on the dragon and stuff. Mm. You know what I mean? So he will be only able to finally ask her once again in A Dream of Spring. And I don't think he will be successful. He will just be a broken leftover, really.
Yeah, you know, what I think is maybe I have Tolkien on the brain, but I think a potential, you know, relatively happy ending for Jorah is a fate similar to that of Eowyn from The Lord of the Rings. You know, in The Lord of the Rings, Eowyn fell real hard for Aragorn, and when he rejected her, she kind of lost all the will to live, but it manifested in this desire to be, like, super hardcore and go fight and you know, test her mettle, because she wasn't afraid of death anymore because her heart was broken. And, you know, she kills the Witch King, which is awesome, but she gets really fucked up in the process, which is not so awesome. And as she recuperates, you know, she basically has to learn to have a new purpose in life beyond caring for her uncle, who's now dead, or pining after Aragorn, who's off the market. You know, and just I don't want to say settling, because Faramir seems like a catch, but, you know, but just finding a way to be happy in a life that doesn't go according to the grand plans that you had for it. And that's a pretty fair parallel with Jorah in any number of ways. So I'm hoping that he's allowed to kind of get past his obsession with both with Daenerys romantically and then with proving that he is worthy of Daenerys as a friend and as an advisor and as a potential romantic partner, and just learns to kind of live for himself for once, which he has never done as an adult, as best anyone can tell, because he was so busy trying to prove what a great knight he was to the wife who wound up leaving him because he wasn't so great. I don't know. I'm a softie at heart, and I want poor Jorah Mormont to find happiness before he dies.
Yeah, I'm sorry to disappoint, but I think he won't get there.
I'm not saying he's going to live to a ripe old age and then die. I feel like it's possible for Jorah to die without feeling like a complete failure.
Maybe. But I think it might also be that he just survives. He'll be like one of the persons who really simply just survived the series, because you can't have everyone dying,
mm-hmm.
but not in a good place. That is a little bit hard. But let's return to Mokoro for a moment. What do you think will happen to him once Victarion is dead?
I think Mokoro's ride or die with Daenerys, you know. I think, you know,
Mokoro... What role will he fill?
I mean, I think he's her Melisandre, essentially.
Like a good version of it?
Yeah. Like one who knows what he's talking about. You know, because someone has to communicate to Daenerys that, according to the worshippers of R'hllor, she's the Messiah. Which, Daenerys being Daenerys, she probably has convinced herself anyway, but she needs an official representative of the religion to actually make the specific case for her. And I think it's him.
Okay, so one more. One important character that is stuck in limbo for years now is Marvin the Mage.
Ooh, I hadn't even thought of him.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of think that's the point.
Yeah.
But he left in Feast for Crows, and we haven't heard of him since. So,
I don't know that I have anything terribly interesting to say about Marwyn the Mage. I mean, I think he'll show up and give Dany his advice and be sort of a way to keep the Maesters front and center in people's minds, so that when there is some kind of conflict with Old Town or Maesters in the future, you know, he prepared us for that. And, you know, he may become some sort of court sorcerer. You know, I could certainly see her slowly assembling like a little X-Men crew of people who were good at magic. You know, Mokoro being one and Marwyn being another, and who knows who else.
Yeah. I mean, the question with Marwyn is basically, will the Citadel try to kill her dragons? And her.
Right. That I could not say.
Because, I mean, that's the fear that motivates him to leave head over heels to get to her.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Citadel will be excited to see her and the dragons. Why would they, you know?
Yeah, not really.
You know, I mean, Robert was back in Game of Thrones, and they were talking about, like, you know, you think you're going to win over Westeros when you show up with, like, a horde of Dothraki, like... You know, now she'll be showing up with the horde. You know, perhaps the Dothraki will all just set up shop in Volantis. I don't know. But, you know, it's at least as likely that she shows up not only with a horde of Dothraki, but also with, like, hundreds of thousands of of freed slaves. Like, no one's going to be excited to see that. And no one's going to be excited to see the berserk, like, half-barbarian daughter of the Mad King show up with an actual dragon. I think conflict with authority of any kind in Westeros is more than likely. And that that certainly includes the Citadel.
Yeah, I agree.
Hey, we agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should we end on a note of agreement?
We should, but the real ending belongs to someone else.
Oh, yes. This is exciting.
This is very exciting, because one of the many, many cool rewards that you can get if you support us at Patreon is to get your name named. Do you say that? Name named? At the end of the episode, because you pledged $10 or more. So we have our first slew of people we want to thank very dearly for supporting us and to simply name here as a token of our eternal gratitude. And I suggest we simply take turns and call him out. Thank you, Leslie Jividen, for supporting us.
Andrew, we really appreciate every penny that you gave to this noble cause.
Sexlefort, the same goes to you.
Dear Liz, or Dire Liz, that probably makes a lot more sense than Dear Liz. Dire Liz, I like it. I like it a lot. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And of course, Andrew Gertsen, we also thank you very much for supporting us.
And Caitlin, you too. We really appreciate it. And Jamel Bowie, our first guest in our in a series that we promised actually will be a series of the Blah Salon, where we have on prominent people from other fields. Jamel, who's doing yeoman's work reporting on this crazy election season. It's late. Thank you so much for your support.
Yeah. Thank you also for John Spinella, who has pledged money early, and I think he also chimed in for your screen on your laptop. So thanks again, mm-hmm. John.
Mm-hmm. Shelley Bittnar, thank you. We really, 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 really appreciate it.
And last but not least, Nathaniel Kemp, thank you very much for supporting us.
It's a good crew. This is a good group of people. I feel good about it. I feel good about having these people in our corner, in our Kingsguard, our small council, our Blood Riders.
Blood Riders is good.
Yes!
We don't have any weapons to give, but it's a new century, all right.
No, we're arming you with knowledge about A Song of Ice and Fire. That's what we're doing. So. Yes. Thank you, everybody who has pledged so far, especially this crew and you know, it means so much to us that the podcast means enough to you guys that you're willing to part with some of your hard-earned money, because I know money is tight for pretty much everybody, to keep the podcast going and to show your support. It means so much. I really can't say that enough. So, you know, again, if you want to hop on patreon.com/boiledleatheraudiohour or go to boiledleather.com and click the PayPal link, we're extremely grateful for any support. And that's about that.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, bye. Everyone. We'll see you next time, and it'll be soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.